Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Kelly Jean Kelly, Ann Ball, and Marcia James. Later, Katie Weaver will bring us this week's Personal Technology Report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
Vietnam and China have agreed to try to end their dispute over their conflicting territorial claims in the South China Sea. On Saturday, the two nations released a joint statement in Beijing. In the statement, they said they would try to peacefully settle their conflicting claims in the sea. State-run media in both countries reported on the statement. It was released during a 4-day visit to China by Vietnamese Communist Party General Secretary Nguyen Phu Trang. He met with Chinese President Xi Jinping during the visit. The Vietnamese news website, VietnamNet.vn, reported that the two leaders agreed to speed up talks on joint development in the Gulf of Tonkin. The report said the agreement means effectively stepping up joint projects in less sensitive areas. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Taiwan also claim parts of the sea. The area holds rich fishing areas and could hold large amounts of oil or gas. Unlike Vietnam, countries with claims to the area usually do not publicly criticize China's naval activities in the South China Sea or its island-building activities. Frederick Burke is one of the leaders of the Ho Chi Minh City office of the Baker & McKenzie multinational law firm. He says improved relations between China and Vietnam could help protect ships that bring exports from Asia to markets in the West. He says it will also make the commercial fishing industry safer.
There was concern about instability, that this might be a flashpoint for conflict as China's military capacity continues to grow. I think those concerns won't disappear overnight, but this is a very strong and positive message that the parties will work things out.
Some experts say Vietnam is the strongest opponent of China's expansion into the 3.5 million square kilometer sea. It competes with China for control of the Spratly group of islands. Vietnam also has criticized China's control of the Paracel Islands, which are east of Vietnam and southwest of Hong Kong. In 1974, China seized some of the Paracel Islands, which were controlled by South Vietnamese troops at the time. South Vietnam fell to the Communist North in 1975 at the end of the Vietnam War. In 1988, 70 Vietnamese sailors were killed in a naval battle with China. Most recently, boats from the two countries rammed into one another in 2014. The incident caused deadly anti-China riots in Vietnam. Huang Viet Phung is the head of Institutional Research and Investment Advisory at SSI Securities Services in Hanoi. She said the agreement has not caused people in Vietnam to change their beliefs about China yet, especially about economic relations. At this point in time, we haven't seen any real development except for the recent visit to China, but the real impact, we need to work on that. I think people might not be that excited, except for the fact that last year we know that quite a lot of tourists came to Vietnam, she said. Experts say it is too early to know the result of the new effort by the two countries. I'm Mario Ritter.
The first U.S. president, George Washington, was inaugurated in New York City. At the time, New York was the temporary capital of the country. Because Americans had never had a president before, George Washington had to wait a week before lawmakers could agree on what an inauguration ceremony should look like. Finally, on April 30th, the president and vice president-to-be, along with other lawmakers, gathered at the Senate building. They walked to the balcony and waved at the crowd. Then a judge asked Washington to swear to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States. Those are the words the U.S. Constitution requires. The judge wanted Washington to swear on a Bible, but at the last minute, the judge realized he did not have one. A messenger had to find and borrow one quickly. After the oath, Washington read a speech to the senators. One of those senators described the scene in his diary. William McClay wrote that Washington appeared nervous and uncomfortable. Washington trembled and had difficulty reading his speech. The ceremony was short, sweet, and, according to McClay, awkward.
Thomas Jefferson, the third president, had an inauguration that was reportedly even simpler. He walked to the ceremony instead of being driven in a carriage, as the first two presidents had done. When Jefferson arrived at the Capitol, a large crowd met him. The president-elect had prepared a speech. But when Jefferson gave it, his voice was so soft that few people heard him. Today, Jefferson's first inaugural speech is well known among Americans. It is famous for trying to ease the ugly dispute between political parties during the campaign. But apparently the bitter taste of the election remained. Jefferson's rival in the election, former President John Adams, did not attend the inauguration. In the dark hours just before the ceremony, Adams packed his bags, quit the White House, and took a coach back to Boston. Not all presidents have memorable inaugurations, but the inauguration of Calvin Coolidge, the 30th president, is notable for being the least memorable. In August of 1923, Coolidge was the vice president. He did not have many duties, and went on vacation at his family's house in Vermont. In the middle of the night, his father woke him up with a telegram. It said that the president, Warren Harding, had died. Coolidge was now president. Coolidge wrote in his diary that his first act was to stop and pray. Then he found the text of the inaugural oath from the Constitution. He gave it to his father. Mr. Coolidge Sr. administered the oath in the family's living room by the light of a kerosene lamp. Within half an hour, the new president was back in bed.
In contrast, most Americans can call to mind the dramatic, emotional inauguration of Lyndon Johnson, the 36th president, an hour and a half after John F. Kennedy's death. The event is captured in an iconic image of Johnson on the president's plane, Air Force One. Johnson is raising his hand as he takes the oath of office. His wife is on one side. Jackie Kennedy, the former president's widow, stands at his other. The judge administering the oath is also a woman. She is the first and only female judge to swear in a U.S. president. The image is famous because it shows the shock on Mrs. Kennedy's face. She still has on the suit she was wearing when her husband was shot. The image also provided proof to the American people that a new president had been sworn in. It promised that even in moments of chaos, the U.S. government continued.
But that is not to say that the U.S. government always operates smoothly. Many inaugurations go wrong. After Andrew Jackson's inauguration in 1829, supporters at the White House were so eager to shake the new president's hand that they almost crushed him against a wall. Jackson had to leave his own party by escaping out a window. In 1865, another Andrew Johnson, delivered his vice presidential speech drunk. In his defense, he was sick. He had been using whiskey as medicine. Ulysses S. Grant, in 1873, wanted live birds at his inaugural ball. Unfortunately, the day was very cold. The birds froze to death. Similarly, in 1973, Richard Nixon aimed to clear pigeons from the path of the inaugural parade by spraying chemicals. He succeeded, sort of. On Inauguration Day, the crowd had to step over the bodies of the dead birds all along Pennsylvania Avenue. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Ann Ball.
There is a colorful Caribbean art gallery and gift boutique located downtown in Naples, Florida. The store is small and offers a large collection of beautiful Haitian paintings and other art that you cannot find anywhere else. The store is named The Lady from Haiti. Behind its funky name is a story of love. Melody Bales owns the store. Bales took an interest in the Caribbean early in life, partly because of its art.
It was the paintings originally that attracted me to Haiti. I had seen one in a studio, in a gallery on St. John's Island, one of the American Virgin Islands. And I speak French. I was fascinated by the sound of the language, and my parents had gotten me a book when I was a young kid called The Slave Who Freed Haiti, and it was the story of Toussaint Louverture, the slave that led the revolt against Napoleon. So I think the fact that that was somehow embedded in my consciousness and the sound of the French language and my love for the Caribbean, so that made me want to go and live in Haiti.
So that is what she did. In the mid-1980s, Melody Bales moved to Haiti, where she taught second grade students.
I landed there and I was in shock that I couldn't use my French too much because the official language is French, but the people speak Creole. But I adjusted really well to my class. It was a second grade class. I had wonderful children from diplomats from all over the world because Port-au-Prince is a capital city. And I had the children of American businessmen before the embargo had ruined their businesses, and the Haitian elite sent their children to our school. It was an American curriculum, and that's what they wanted.
Bales also taught swimming after school and in the summertime. She fell in love with Haiti, especially its people.
I think the people of Haiti are wonderful. They're very, very sweet. They're humble, they're accepting of their plight a lot of times. They work very hard if they get a chance. They're modest, they're kind, they're sharing, all the different things that people that aren't in a big rush to get somewhere fast and achieve and to grab more and more for themselves, a lot of the things that we don't experience so much in our country anymore are still present in Haiti.
Bale says she wishes that Americans knew more about the Caribbean islands' rich culture as well.
I would love people in this country to understand that Haiti has so much more to offer. Even though it's not an educated society for the most part, they have so much more to offer creatively, musically, artistically, the poetry, the literature. They come from a rich background.
Bale stayed in Haiti for 6 years, much longer than expected. She says each time she planned to return to the U.S., something held her back. And then came the chance of a lifetime, a Haitian baby girl in need of a mother.
I had wanted to have a child. I had done an unsuccessful in vitro. And then I told a doctor friend of mine, a Haitian doctor friend of mine, that it didn't work. And he said, "So are you ready for a Haitian baby?" I said, "I just want a baby."
Soon, Bales was connected with a pregnant woman who could not afford to care for the coming baby. But there was little time left to act.
I met this mother. She was going to have the baby within 2 weeks. So in that period of time, I took her to the doctor, another friend of my doctor friends, and had a sonogram. And I was thrilled to see that it was a healthy, developed girl.
Melody Bale says it was a match made in heaven. She named her daughter Rachel.
I tell my daughter Rachel, I've known her longer than she's known me. I saw her first.
Bales returned to the United States with her daughter Rachel to begin their lives together. Rachel was the inspiration for the Lady from Haiti store. Bale says she wanted her daughter to grow up surrounded by the Haitian native culture with its beautiful colors, creativity, and spirit.
The art in Haiti is one of the strongest features about the Haitian culture. There are basically five schools, different schools of art in Haiti. The ones that a lot of people think of, the market scenes or the Peaceable Kingdom scene, the jungle animals, and those are very charming. And then there's the school of the voodoo art, which is, it's pretty strong. Voodoo is a pantheistic religion that came from Africa, and the Haitian people brought a lot of those beliefs with them.
Another popular Haitian art form found at the Lady from Haiti is made from recycled material.
It's called fer de couper, which means cut metal. And it's literally 55-gallon drums that have been cut with a cold chisel and a ball-peen hammer.
Bell explains that a design is drawn on the metal before the artist begins to make the cuts.
And they're fashioned into the most beautiful creations. Sometimes they're exotic animals or religious icons or country scenes. But each time I see one, it's really satisfying because I realize it's hard work, sweat, a wonderful imagination, and I love them because they have so much detail.
Bales also loves the papier-mâché art made in Haiti.
I think the papier-mâché is cute just because it's so whimsical. It's made from recycled cement bags. They use a heavy-duty craft paper in Haiti, which is so heavy that it actually cracks when you fold it. And they use a ground-up root, I believe it's called manioc, as the paste. And they make really charming little animals.
Melody Bales is grateful for the wonderful things Haiti has given her, especially daughter Rachel. The Lady from Haiti Gallery will continue to give back to the island as it shares Haitian art, color, and spirit with the rest of the world. I'm Marcia James.
This is What's Trending Today. The world's oldest known zoo gorilla has died. Kolo was born in 1956 at the Columbus Zoo in the American state of Ohio. She was the first ever gorilla to be born in captivity. She died in her sleep on January 17th, zoo officials said. Kolo lived more than 20 years beyond the average life expectancy for female gorillas in human care. Researchers studied her to better understand how to help animals live longer in zoos. Kolo touched the hearts of generations of people, said Columbus Zoo and Aquarium officials. She was an ambassador for gorillas and inspired people to learn more about the critically endangered species and motivated them to protect gorillas in their native habitat. When Kolo was born, most zookeepers believed gorillas born in captivity could not survive. Kolo became a beloved animal across America. On her 60th birthday in December, hundreds of zoo visitors celebrated the event. They watched her open presents and eat a special cake, reportedly made with apples and tomatoes. On Wednesday, thousands of people remembered Kolo on social media. The Columbus Zoo's Facebook post about Kolo's passing has been shared more than 27,000 times. More than 3,000 people left comments and shared memories of visiting Kolo at the zoo. One woman posted a photo of Kolo and her young daughter looking at each other while touching their hands to the glass window. The woman wrote that Kolo and my daughter shared the most wonderful and profound moment. We will never forget her. And that's what's trending today.
Android and Apple fans have always argued about which phone is better. Now they can debate which digital assistant is better. Using your voice to give commands to a computer once seemed like science fiction. Now, we expect our phones to provide such assistance. Siri from Apple and Google Assistant from Google both try to answer users' questions. The two companies each hope that by offering the best digital assistants, they will sell more of their products and services. Siri first came to the iPhone in October of 2011 with the iPhone 4S. Now, Siri is available on many other Apple products, such as iPad, Apple TV, Mac computers, and more. You can use Siri to control Apple Music, open apps, set a timer, check your email, get directions, add an appointment to your calendar, send a text message, start a video call, check your calendar for your next appointment, search the internet, set a reminder, find photos, get scores from sporting events, tell you a joke, check the weather, and ask Siri what it can do. One thing you should not ask Siri is to divide 0 by 0. Beginning with iOS 10, Siri can now be used with apps from companies other than Apple. You can now ask Siri to make reservations at a restaurant using OpenTable, get a ride with Uber, send tweets using Twitter, discover the best local places on Yelp, start a run with Nike Run Club, make a call on Skype or WhatsApp, post to Facebook, tell you what song is playing using Shazam. Google Assistant is a new digital assistant, having recently arrived on the Pixel and Pixel XL phones and the Google Home smart speaker. Google Assistant works with other Google services, such as Gmail, Google Flights, Google Photos, and Google Maps. The more you use Google, the more useful Google Assistant becomes. You can use Google Assistant to get a daily briefing of news, find out your travel schedule, set reminders, send videos to your Chromecast streaming TV device, get the weather, find out the travel time to work, check your calendar, find photos on Google Photos, ask Google Assistant what it can do. Both Siri and Google Assistant can be very useful in many situations, but their usefulness depends on how much you use their compatible products. If you use Apple products, Siri is the assistant that will work best for you. If you use Google products, then Google Assistant will work better for you. The choice between an iPhone that has Siri and an Android phone that has Google Assistant should not be based on the assistant it uses. Assistants can be improved through updates that add new powers. Choose the phone that works best for you and learn what its assistant can do to help you the most. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.